You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, alongside Rob Rang. Rob, for the first time since 2013, the Seahawks are 2-0. They've won their road opener, and they did it on Pete Carroll's 68th birthday for his 100th win. This was really a day of breaking droughts and setting milestones.
No, it really was. I mean, as you said, it's 68th birthday, and the Seahawks walk into Heinz Field and beat the Steelers there for the first time. And, you know, I mean, and Russell Wilson obviously is 1-0 in Heinz Field. I mean, just so many exciting things about Seattle's performance. And one of the things I was most excited about is, I know something that you're excited about too, is just it felt like 2013 again. The Seahawks not only came prepared, but the adjustments that they made throughout on the offense and defensive side of the football, it really feels like this is a team that's already playing well, and the future is much, much brighter.
Yeah, we're going to kick things off talking about the incredible performance of both Seattle's star quarterback and the play caller on the sidelines. In the second quarter, it's time to open up our mailbag on Monday, tackle your Seahawks and NFL questions, and we'll close out today's podcast with a bit of trade chatter. Two high-profile defensive backs are now available on the market. Who would be a better fit for the Seahawks? Rob, you and I are going to be debating. But first, your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Seattle gets the signature 28-26 win over Pittsburgh. This is the first time they've won in Pittsburgh since Bill Clinton was president. The offense was pretty stagnant in the first half, but then, Rob, they really came out. Seattle did. They came out and they were really aggressive with that quick passing game. They had three straight touchdown drives in the second half, built their lead up to 28-19, and it ended up being close at the end because of a fumble. But really the difference in this game, I think, you know, obviously Russell Wilson had a phenomenal game, but you've got to give a ton of credit to Brian Schottenheimer for the adjustments they made coming out of halftime.
Oh, absolutely. Like I mentioned before, I mean, that's not something that we saw a lot of last year, frankly. I thought that there was, you know, some adjustments as Brian Schottenheimer came in, and you could just see that he and Russell Wilson were kind of making their adjustments. This game felt different. It felt like that Seattle obviously was struggling early, allowing the four sacks in the first quarter. And then, it's kind of like what we talked about, you know, last week when we were previewing this game. We talked about what's the perfect game plan. We wanted to run the ball. That was what we argued, you and I argued, that Seattle should do. They want to run the ball. They want to take their shots over the top. And that was working at times, but at the same time, it was not working consistently enough. So, again, kudos to Brian Schottenheimer for adjusting that and going to the quick passing game. Kudos for sticking with the running game, as well as what has now been widely reported, Rashad Penny making his own halftime adjustment, watching the tape and being able to adjust on that run to spring himself free for the longest touchdown run of Seattle's short season so far. So, yeah, I think that there are a lot of gold stars to be handed out this week, and certainly Brian Schottenheimer is key among them.
Yeah, this game had its ugly moments, just like last week, but I think there's a lot more positives to glean than there were in the win over the Bengals. The Seahawks, they remained balanced offensively, so they can really, you think about the game plan that we were talking about, they couldn't get that play-action passing game going because Wilson just simply didn't have time back there with the pass rush coming after him, but that's where the adjustment came in. The Seahawks didn't give up on running the ball. You mentioned the Penny touchdown. What a filthy cut that he had at the line of scrimmage there to make the outside linebacker miss, and then he just explodes through the seam, and nobody can catch him. 37-yard touchdown. Chris Carson had some nice plays in the second half as well. Obviously, the fumble issue is something he's going to have to work out, but this offense was really dialed in and clicking with Russell Wilson dictating things to the defense, just unloading the football. What did Next Gen Stats have? His throws were coming out within 1.89 seconds. It was ridiculous. I mean, he was just dropped back, bam! I mean, he was just dicing them up all over the field. Finished 29 for 35, 300 yards, three touchdowns. And I think this is just incredible, Rob. When you think about the offense he's played in his entire career, the fifth fastest quarterback to 200 touchdown passes for a career, and an offense that loves to run the football as much as Seattle's does. Just another remarkable accomplishment. It shows you just how efficient he has been with his opportunities throughout his 8 years in the NFL.
Oh, there's a reason why he signed the biggest deal in NFL history. You know, you know, Russell Wilson is a legitimate MVP candidate. He's a legitimate All-Pro. There are, you know, so many terrific quarterbacks throughout the NFL. Unfortunately, Seahawks fans saw one of them, and Ben Roethlisberger, go down. They potentially another one here with Drew Brees. Obviously, New Orleans is next on Seattle's schedule. Two great quarterbacks go down, and Russell Wilson, knock on wood, has not had the injuries concerns at this point. He's been incredibly durable, incredibly reliable, incredibly consistent, and as you said, in an offense that is catered to running the football, he still already has the 200 touchdowns. It makes you wonder how much more productive could he be in a scheme that asks him to throw the ball. I wonder if his stats might be higher, but if his Super Bowl opportunities might be lesser. And I think that's one of the reasons why he opted to remain in Seattle, because Russell Wilson is all about the ring rather than the statistics. And that's why that I think that Seattle is very much in the heat of the Super Bowl race. At least here we are in week two.
In terms of his ability to anticipate guys getting open, that might have been the best that I've ever seen Russell Wilson play yesterday. I'm thinking about the two touchdown passes to Will Dissly, and he was throwing those footballs before Dissly was even open, but he knew he was going to get open. He threw one to the right spot. He's like, I've got a big target down there running down the seam. I'm going to get the football to where only he can catch it, and it's going to be up high enough that it's away from the defenders. And then Will Dissly showing off his incredible hands through contact in the end zone. Both times, Sean Davis, the safety, coming in and leveling him, and he held on both times. And then there was the bomb to DK Metcalf, which I thought for a second Metcalf was going to have his first major drop in the NFL. He was bobbling it, but he showed incredible concentration there, latches onto the football, hangs on, gets both feet in bounds, and gets his first NFL scores. So just some phenomenal throws, and it really was like the end of 2015 when we saw Russell Wilson so dialed in, and they were getting so much done with the quick passing game. Yesterday was the first time in a while we've really seen him dialed in with that style, and Brian Schottenheimer just kept it going.
No, he really did, and I'm so happy that you mentioned Dissly. You know, I mean, I've been one of those who you know, questioned whether it was possible for Will Dissly to be able to come back and ever play at the level that he flashed a year ago as a rookie. And of course, as has been well documented, this is a former defensive lineman at University of Washington. He did not play much tight end. So, you know, the flashes that he showed last year as a rookie before going down with the injury, I thought, okay, this is a little bit of a function of the offense, a little bit of a Seattle wants to kind of feature a guy to make other teams focus in on him as the season goes on. And again, I was one of those who was kind of knocking on the door or arguing that Seattle should be considering a tight end. Kudos to Will Dissly. With the you know possible exception of Russell Wilson, Schottenheimer, we talked about Rashad Penny as well, DK Metcalf making a big play, but Will Dissly was absolutely terrific. Looked like Mark Bavaro out there with the way he was just bulldozing defenders. It is not often that you walk into Pittsburgh and you bully around the Steelers in their home field, and that's exactly what the Seahawks did, and no one did it better than Dissly. So to me, that was a huge, huge thing. If you want to give all the compliments you want to Schottenheimer and all in the play calling, what about the execution by some of the Seahawks players? Again, not only Russell Wilson, but the big guys up front, their abilities to adjust to the blocking, and then finishing the game, a game where a year or a week ago, we didn't see Seattle quite finish the way you wanted. He certainly finished the way you want against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, if Wilson didn't have such an efficient day completing 82% of his passes, then Will Dissly is your MVP. Caught every target that was thrown at him. He had two pancakes. There's one I posted on social media today. He just absolutely levels. I believe it was Devin Bush that he actually leveled at the second level, pancaked him. So he's proving he can do it all, and that is great news for the Seahawks offense moving forward. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started. Coming up after a quick break, Rob and I are going to take on some of your toughest Seahawks and NFL questions in our Monday mailbag. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. There's nothing I enjoy more in this world than attending a sporting event or a concert. When I'm looking for my next live event, I roll with Vivid Seats, an online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that last a lifetime. Vivid Seats allows you to see your favorite live entertainment in person, earning credit back on all purchases made through the Vivid Seats app via the Vivid Seats Reward Loyalty Program. With reward statuses ranging from MVP to Hall of Famer, customers can earn from 10% up to 16% credit on all their purchases through the app. Struggling to find your seat? You can also use the Vivid Seats app to find your way. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by 100% guarantee. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you to get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code KICKOFF at checkout now to receive a discount up to $100. Thanks to Vivid Seats for sponsoring our podcast. Welcome back, 12s. This is the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, alongside Rob Rang. Later in the third quarter, trade winds are once again blowing. There's a few stud defensive backs out there wanting to change zip codes. We'll explore Seattle's potential interest in these two players and debate which one would be a better fit. But first, you guys have questions. Hopefully, we've got answers. It's the Monday mailbag here on Locked On Seahawks. Let's get to it. First question coming from Justin. He writes, how concerned are you about Chris Carson's fumble issues, and is he in jeopardy of losing his starting job?
Well, at least for me, I'm not that concerned. The reason why I'm not so concerned with Chris Carson is because I really do believe this, that each of his fumbles seem to me to be different types of situations. You saw one of the fumbles yesterday against Pittsburgh, for example. It was Russell Wilson, when he was giving the ball to Carson, it kind of bounced off the top of Carson's chest, not really in the gut. Now, you, of course, Corbin, being a former running back, you're going to have a lot better perspective than I was. I was one of those guys who was trying to block, didn't actually collect the ball in my hands. But I thought that was more of a miscue between Russell Wilson and Chris Carson than the classic fumbles that you worry about, where a guy just puts his helmet or his shoulder pad into the ball or gets it ripped away free. There's anytime you have a back like Carson who runs as hard and as ferociously as he does, you know you're going to have some fumbles that way. I have not seen that be a huge concern for Carson throughout his career in Seattle and previously at Oklahoma State. Now, all that said, it's got to stop now, because Rashad Penny is showing that he's knocking on the door. He wants more snaps. And we even saw a little bit of C.J. Procise in the game yesterday. So I think that Seattle does, of course, have the running backs behind Carson to push him. But I think that Carson remains your starter. And as long as he nips this in the bud, I do not think it is a concern moving forward.
I don't know if I could coach running backs in the NFL, Rob, because it drives me nuts. Being a former high school running back coach, I've had some guys that I coached that went on to play college ball and, you know, had some decent players. Nobody that's ever been in the NFL. But these guys are so talented that they can get away with it a lot of the time. But, you know, I always coach 3 points of pressure holding the football. And most of these running backs don't do that. And Chris Carson a lot of the time does not. He normally has the ball down with 2 points of pressure, and he usually can get away with it because he's so strong. But you saw yesterday why that's a problem when T.J. Watt came in and punched the football out. If he's got that football up around his chest and he's got that extra point of pressure, that ball's not getting punched out. So that's something that drives me nuts, and I'm not even calling Carson out with this. It's just NFL running backs in general. It seems like fundamentals in that regard are not there. So that being said, I'm not that concerned either about this. He last year had a little blip where he had a couple fumbles against the Panthers and Packers. He got it fixed, didn't have another fumble the rest of the season, and I think he can get this turned around quickly. As far as starting jobs go, this is his job right now. They're not going to be just pulling the plug on him. Still way too important to their backfield, but I could see his, you know, time on the field getting trimmed a little bit just because of how well Rashad Penny played yesterday. And you mentioned Procise. He did a few nice things with limited action yesterday as well. So Carson, if he wants to maintain having the largest workload there, you can't afford to keep fumbling. As you said, this has got to get nipped now. Got to fix it now. Lyndon writes, can you explain why we struggled so bad against Cincinnati and the stupid Niners ran them off the field? I'm not confident in the Seahawks doing well in this division right now. And an interesting negative perspective after winning their second straight game.
Well, you know, I think that, to me, this is one of the things that I really question about some Seattle fans, in that I wonder if they expect Seattle to look like World Beaters every single game. And if so, then I'd ask you, how do you maintain that over the course of a regular season? And in Seattle's case, a team I absolutely believe is postseason bound throughout the course of the postseason. I think that that is part of that rope-a-dope that Seattle talked about, or Pete Carroll specifically talked about after the victory against Cincinnati. I think that you do not show everything that you've got every single opponent. You accurately gauge your opponent. You create a game plan that is going to show as few of the cards as you have to show. And then as the game goes on, if you have to get a little bit more risky, then you go for that. But I think that Seattle looked at Cincinnati and recognized they have a couple of you know, very, very talented defensive linemen. Geno Atkins, certainly. Carlos Dunlap, certainly. But Seattle should be able to handle that. They should be able to run the ball. They should be able to beat a team that does not have an A.J. Green on the outside, and offense are not likely to be able to score a lot of points. I don't think that Seattle anticipated that John Ross was going to have the biggest game of his NFL career. But that said, I think that they played that game close to the vest. I think that they we talked about in the first quarter about how Seattle made so many adjustments against Pittsburgh. I think that you are going to see Seattle kind of raise their level of performance or lower their level of performance based on their opponent, and that is realistic coaching of football. That's one of the reasons that Pete Carroll has had the incredible success just about everywhere he's ever gone.
I think this is just simple. Week one, especially when you're playing a team that's got a brand new coach, new scheme and everything, you can't really game plan for that. You don't know what to expect. The Seahawks didn't know what to expect. So week two is always a better barometer than week one. There's always a bunch of surprises the first week of the season. You see teams that play well in week one and then they come out week two and look really flat. So I'm not surprised this happened. And I think this is understating the 49ers' ability. This is a team that I talk about all offseason. If everything comes together, the 49ers could be right in the mix to win this division. They've got pieces there. If Garoppolo plays really well, then they do have a chance to be in that playoff mix. So you're understating their ability, and I think Cincinnati, it's a case they were in the game early, and then it kind of snowballed on them. They're trying to figure things out under a new coach. So I don't think that this is saying anything, you know, negative about Seattle from the week before. They didn't know what to expect, and that gives the opponent, an advantage, and they certainly had that in that game. And the Seahawks let them get a lot of yardage, but not a lot of points. Again, that rope-a-dope idea that Carroll was pitching, they certainly did that. This weekend, they pulled out a lot more wrinkles. Mitch writes, why haven't the Seahawks played Ziggy Ansah yet? I thought he was supposed to be ready weeks ago.
Well, as they talked about, I mean, he kind of is coming off the shoulder injury and then tweaked his groin. You know, one of the things I noticed, you know, prior to the Pittsburgh game, Greg Bell at Tacoma News Tribune tweeted out some live video of Ziggy Ansah working out. And I didn't see the explosiveness, you know, in his burst off the snap that, frankly, I was hoping to see. So once I saw that, I thought, wow, unless Seattle really feels like they need him, I wonder if they're going to start him. So I was not surprised, certainly disappointed, but not surprised that Ziggy Ansah did not suit up against Pittsburgh. You know, every indication I have, and I've been talking to people with Seattle, I've been talking with people close to Ziggy Ansah, is that he is very, very close. If this was a playoff game, for example, then I think that they feel like he could play. You just want to get him back and have him be back and right, back healthy. And, of course, Seattle, you know, was not anticipating that the Saints would not be walking in with Drew Brees. And so I think that they were, again, like we talked about before, you're going to work week one, week two. You're always going to be trying to make adjustments. I think that their hope was that they would come back to CenturyLink and have Jadeveon Clowney, Ziggy Ansah, and, of course, LJ Collier as well, all back on the field at the same time to handle Drew Brees and that explosive New Orleans Saints offense. As it turns out, it's not going to be Drew Brees. It's going to be Teddy Bridgewater, but I would argue that is still a formidable matchup, and that is what you're hoping for, is that Ziggy Ansah comes back and he's not 90%, he's not 95%, he's 100% ready to rock.
Yeah, this has been all about running the marathon, not running a sprint. They were not going to rush him back for week one. And I think this entire process, they had hoped he was going to be ready for week one, but they were not going to take chances here. And if they felt he needed another week or two, they were going to give him that week or two so that they could hopefully get the rest of the season out of him. So I'm expecting, based on what I'm hearing now, that he's going to be playing against the Saints this weekend. And they certainly could use him, because the pass rush after the first couple drives yesterday really disappeared, especially especially once Mason Rudolph was in, they couldn't get pressure on him. So they could definitely use a healthy Ziggy Ansah. They're not going to force the issue, but I would expect he's going to be back this week. Now they've given a few more weeks to really make sure that he is ready to go, ready to play NFL football. And our next question here, coming from Greg, this one's directly for Rob. He says, Rob, I'm so done with Jermaine Ifedi. Please tell me the time is coming for him to be on the bench. Please.
But I hear what you're saying. I mean, I do. I get it, because it does feel like there are times where if there's a holding call, if there's a false start, then you almost expect it to be Jermaine Ifedi. That said, I do believe that Russell Wilson deserves at least some of the blame for some of the holding calls that Jermaine Ifedi gets. Now, that's not going to change things in the running game, because Ifedi certainly gets his plenty of his holds in the running game, and obviously the false starts. Right tackle is either one of the tackle positions is much more difficult than guard or center, obviously, when it comes to being false starts, especially on the road, because you're simply that much further away from the quarterback. And then the reason why I blame Russell Wilson so much, if you watch Wilson, many, many times in which he scrambles, he wants to roll to his right. Most right-handed quarterbacks do that. And so, as they've shown so many times on the replays, you'll see Ifedi's in pretty good position. And once the defensive lineman starts to slide a little bit and Russell Wilson starts to slide, then the blockers have to try and anticipate where their quarterback is going. And once that defensive lineman starts to slide away, then the offensive lineman has to let go immediately. And it just feels like some of the referees or officials are very much focusing in on Ifedi in that regard. So I understand the frustration with Ifedi. I would argue that on the three or four snaps in which he makes a mistake, that sometimes those are getting much more attention from a lot of people than the 40 or 50 snaps in which he's doing his job, in some cases, very, very well. There was a couple of cut blocks that he had on the aforementioned TJ Watt in this game that were beautiful blocks that were rarely highlighted by the announcers on the game. So unless you feel very confident that it's going to be Fant, it's going to be Jamarco Jones, whatever you think is your upgrade at the current, that's currently on the roster, then I just don't see that. I think those are talented players, but I still think that Ifedi is the best player, and obviously Seattle feels the same thing.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be rushing to make any moves here. And I got to see the all 22. I'll go up. I had another question. It was about Justin Britt. I can't really say how I felt Britt played until I get to see the end zone camera. Same thing goes for Ifedi. But based on the broadcast footage, I actually thought after the start of the game where he got beat by Watt a few times, and one of them was a stunt where DJ Fluker should have been there. He should have been taking that stunt, and they just, I don't know if they didn't communicate it or it was just that there was such instant penetration that Fluker was trying to catch up with the guy. I don't know exactly what happened on those plays. Again, I have to see the all 22, but I think that Ifedi actually did a pretty nice job after the start of that game, and people are going to be upset about the penalties, but I love that you pointed out sometimes it's because of who's behind center, who's playing quarterback. Russell Wilson puts him in a tough spot when you're a lineman like that. Like you said, he's in great position, and then, oh crap, Houdini's over there now running towards the sideline, and oops, my hands are now latched on him, and a lot of times they're just barely latched on, and then they let go, and that's enough for the officials to throw the flag, and it's not even a blatant hold. There were a few holds he had yesterday that were missed too, so that is something that's worth noting, but I don't think they're in a position right now where they're going to be making a move there. Now, if he has a couple games that are really bad, they do have the guys there now that they could make a switch there, but I don't see them rushing into that at all. Coming up next in the third quarter, there are a couple of stud defensive backs out there being shopped. Will the Seahawks have any interest, and if so, which player would be a better fit? We'll be right back on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, alongside NFL draft guru Rob Rang. Rob, I know it's only week two, and typically you don't see a lot of trades made during the early stages of the season. In fact, NFL generally doesn't have many trades to begin with compared to baseball and basketball and even the NHL. The NFL seems like it's picking up a little bit with trades, but we don't normally see it this time of year, and yet there's two high-profile defensive players that are both still in the early stages of their career that want out of their respective situations right now, which has led to speculation the Seahawks might be a potential suitor.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is that under the John Schneider, Pete Carroll era, they have made no bones about it that they are going to explore any and all opportunities to make this roster more talented. Now, whether that be pulling off the coup that was the trade for Jadeveon Clowney, or at least exploring the Antonio Brown possibilities, and then now with Jacksonville's Jalen Ramsey, with Miami's Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, both two defensive backs that fit in so beautifully with what Pete Carroll has always wanted to do in Seattle. If Seattle can get either one of these players for pennies on the dollar like they did with the aforementioned Clowney, then yeah, it makes all the sense in the world to explore those possibilities.
Yeah, I think there's one thing before we get into debating here that I want to point out. A lot of fans, with the Clowney trade going down a few weeks ago, they're saying, let's trade a third rounder to get Fitzpatrick, or let's trade a third to get Ramsey. This is not the same situation as Clowney. Clowney was able to dictate where he went because until he signed his tender, the Texans couldn't trade him. So the Texans had no leverage in that situation. The Jaguars and the Dolphins, they don't have to get rid of either one of these players unless they get the offer that they really want, and it doesn't matter who the team is that they're working with. They don't have to base this off of who Fitzpatrick and Ramsey prefer to play for. So it is a much different situation. The teams have a lot more leverage. That is something worth noting here. The Seahawks are going to have to give up a lot more to get either one of these players. Now, I know going into this show that you were just fired up seeing the news that Jalen Ramsey was asking out of Jacksonville, and you immediately, your face just lit up thinking, man, the Seahawks with Ramsey at corner, it really get that Legion of Boom back in order just with a different shutdown corner.
Yeah, Jalen Ramsey is among the elite defensive backs that I've graded over the last 20 years in the NFL draft scouting business. In terms of Seattle specifically, I mean, my goodness. I mean, there's a reason why former Seattle defensive coordinator Gus Bradley, then in Jacksonville, helped make this selection for the Jaguars, all those years ago. I mean, he's 6'1", he's 210 pounds, he's got 33 3/4-inch arms. Everybody knows the way that Pete Carroll has preferred the arm length. He's some of the corners that Seattle has drafted in the past, their 40-yard dash times have been in the high 4.44s, 4.5s, even 4.6s. I've argued that has not been quite the detriment to Seattle's corners as for others. You don't have to worry about that with Ramsey. He's legit low 4.4. I think it was 4.41, if I remember correctly, at the combine that year. I mean, just absolutely flying at 210 pounds. He played corner. He played free. He played slot. He played strong. He played damn near linebacker at Florida State. Started as a true freshman. It was the first true freshman to start there. I'm pretty sure it's a Deion Sanders. I mean, he has the mentality that Seattle has always looked for. He has the physical tools that Seattle has looked for. Again, I am not arguing that Seattle should trade a first-round pick, and that's frankly what I think Jacksonville should be expecting for a guy who's been an all-pro a couple of times and is still on his rookie deal. But I also am not arguing that you make that type of a move for a guy that might be a rental player. And so unless you feel very, very, very confident that you are going to be able to have some type of long-term option with this player, then I think that this is something that you're excited about. You certainly explore, but I don't know that he is worth the headache that he might be. Obviously, he's had some issues in Jacksonville. That is a team that has struggled to live up to expectations. Seattle is all about exceeding expectations at this point. So, again, I do expect that the Seahawks are going to do their due diligence and explore. And if they can get him or Fitzpatrick, for that matter, then both of them will be terrific additions. But I wonder, as you said, Corbin, I do believe that the Jacksonville Jaguars hold all the cards still, and that I'm not so sure that they're going to be trading Jalen Ramsey just because he is that gifted.
Yeah, they've got all the leverage here. The player can complain all he wants, and certainly with him having an argument with Doug Marrone, the head coach, on the sidelines yesterday, that may have been the final straw in Jacksonville. They've been really frustrated with his attitude, and he's really a player that has openly talked about he doesn't really care about the team, he cares about himself. So I'm not sure that that's somebody the Seahawks, I understand he's a big-time talent, I get a lot of the things that you were mentioning there. Certainly, if we were talking Madden, as we've talked on here before, if we can take the character element out of this, then Jalen Ramsey is a huge upgrade at corner for the Seattle Seahawks. But if they're going to make a deal here, to me, it's got to be Minkah Fitzpatrick. I love the idea of bringing in this kid, former Alabama player. He played the star position for the Crimson Tide. Can play all over the place. Incredible versatility. He's 22 years old. This kid is a pup. He's still learning how to play in the NFL, yet he had a really good rookie season for the Miami Dolphins. Incredible competitor. And from what I know, he is not the distraction Ramsey is. Some may say, well, he's being a distraction in Miami right now. Have you seen what's going on in Miami right now? I mean, they have a dumpster fire there, and they are openly throwing gas on top of it, trying to be as bad as possible. So you can understand the frustration from players. Even somebody like that, like Fitzpatrick, that's supposed to be a building block when this team actually becomes good again, he has been frustrated because he doesn't really want to play near the line of scrimmage a bunch, and he's not really a box safety in the NFL. He doesn't think with his size that he fits there. I look at him as a nickel corner or a free safety. He could play either spot in Seattle. Great versatility. He has 3+ years under club control. That's another thing worth noting. He's only in his second NFL season. He was a first-round pick 2 years ago. So they have at least 3 years with him under club control in that rookie deal. And then there's the fifth-year option there for whoever trades for him as well. Miami has also already paid his signing bonus. So you could get a pretty darn good deal on first-round talent here for 3+ years. That makes it worth a trade way more than Jalen Ramsey, as you mentioned, with being a rental player. You might get 1 year out of him. He's going to want paid immediately when you trade for him. Seattle loves these Swiss Army knife types, but they're going to find a niche for him. This is not going to be like Miami. If the Seahawks make this trade, I don't think the Seahawks are going to bring him and say, we want you to play 6 positions. They're not going to do that to this guy like Miami apparently has. They're not going to push that versatility envelope too much. They may put him at free safety and then also say, hey, you know, in certain situations, we can bring you down to play in the nickel. And they could certainly do that. And these are both huge areas of need. To me, more so than the outside corner positions, where I think Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers are still trending upward, and they're players that still have a lot of upside.
No, absolutely. You hit the nail on the right on the head right there. I mean, because that's the thing. Seattle has not had an issue with developing their outside corners ever since Pete Carroll joined the staff. I mean, that has been their strength, frankly, is that they have lost players that have been very good ones. And then be able every year, it feels like, to be able to kind of replace them just because of the brilliance, frankly, of Seattle's scheme and what they ask their corners to do. And then the fact that the rest of the NFL appears to be trying to play a different style of football that, you know, and so it leaves a lot of these long physical corners for Seattle to grab a hold of. So I argued before about Jalen Ramsey. Physically speaking, he is as impressive as I've ever seen. Character-wise, Minkah Fitzpatrick is about as good as I've ever seen. I mean, he is truly a sheriff in the secondary. I talked before about Jalen Ramsey starting as a freshman for a Florida State team that is definitely struggling right now. But when Ramsey was there, they were still among the best. You know, they were with Jameis Winston and competing for national championships, won a national championship, I should say. You know, with of course, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Alabama guy. People don't realize, I mean, this is the kid who played his high school ball like in New Jersey in the East Coast, wanted to go to Alabama because he wanted to be a champion, wanted to play for Nick Saban, only was there a couple of years, left, and Saban called him as like one of his favorite players of all time because of the versatility that you mentioned, Corbin, and because of just the fact that he is such a competitor. So as you talked about, I mean, it is a dumpster fire in Miami right now. When you have a player who is as competitive as Minkah Fitzpatrick is, you know, he is going to really struggle with this. So to me, this is a case of a player who is young and is frustrated and just wants to win. He sees a lack of those same thoughts from some of his teammates, some of his maybe coaches or front office, because they're obviously trying to rebuild and he's frustrated. But Miami, again, holds the cards. They know that they have potential 3 years of this player on a pretty slight contract, given his talent and his where he was selected and his future. So if Minkah Fitzpatrick is traded, I do believe strongly that he will wind up taking more to get him than, say, a Jalen Ramsey was. So that's why I thought that Ramsey could be a bargain, but he's a roll-of-the-dice risk that scares the heck out of me if you were a team like the Seahawks who already feel like you're rolling. Whereas Minkah Fitzpatrick is more of is building for the future, and certainly that makes sense, but at the same time, it's going to cost a lot more. And considering how Seattle has to very much prioritize all their draft picks at this point, considering the salary cap and where they are, I just would be surprised if Minkah Fitzpatrick is a Seahawk, but if either one of them winds up being traded to Seattle, again, kudos to John Schneider, because I do not believe that he's going to be paying dollar for dollar. I think he's going to be getting pennies on the dollar for these players, and they're both very, very good players who very much fit Seattle's scheme.
It's so funny going into this segment, because I really thought you were going to be going diehard on Ramsey, and I think I feel like in our first trade debate here, we know who kind of got the edge in this debate here. By the end of it, it seemed like you were starting to lean more towards Fitzpatrick, and I know it's going to cost a little bit more, but...
Well, I'll stop you right there, Corbin. Here's the one thing I would say about Ramsey. Now, again, I do feel like Minkah Fitzpatrick is a safer player, and I'm going to go with safe, but at the same time, I don't know if the Seahawks go with safe. Some of the moves that they've made certainly are more aggressive, more bold. I don't know you win Super Bowls by being safe. And so here's the one thing about Ramsey that I was kind of remiss in not mentioning earlier. Jalen Ramsey is a difference maker in the turnover game. And that is obviously something that Pete Carroll has prioritized. If you look at interceptions, Ramsey, I believe, has 9 over the last couple of years. Minkah Fitzpatrick is not that. And he wasn't that even. He was a playmaker in Alabama, but he has not yet shown that to be consistently in Miami. And that's the one thing. If you want to argue about Seattle and where it still can improve in the secondary, I would argue open field tackling is still a little bit of a concern, obviously, at the safety position. We want to see Tedrick Thompson maybe make some big plays as well. But in terms of INTs, you need to see more INTs and less PBUs. Jalen Ramsey can do that. So if Seattle is looking to go all in this season, which would make some sense, then again, I do think that Ramsey does have a very much a possibility in this debate.
Looking at our fan poll, would you prefer Fitzpatrick or Ramsey? Our followers on Twitter, we have over 450 votes so far, still running the poll. 77% said Minkah Fitzpatrick, so this is a landslide, and I'm actually a little surprised by that. I thought there'd be a little bit more leaning towards Ramsey because he's more of a proven pro. He's got the all-pro distinction to his name. Fitzpatrick had a very solid rookie season, but he has not reached that level of being elite to this point. Not that he couldn't do that in Seattle, but like you said, it is a little bit safer of a play, but I really like the club control. I like the versatility, and really, I like the personality. I think the Seahawks need to avoid bringing in somebody like this. Jadeveon Clowney is a good personality, so they were good to make that blockbuster trade. He's not going to ruin your locker room, but Jalen Ramsey, to me, that smells like a bad situation brewing in a locker room that's really darn good right now. It's a strong group that really loves playing together. You don't want to bring the wrong person in to ruin all of that, and I just feel like Ramsey could certainly be that player. It'll be interesting to see what happens here, though. We know, like you mentioned, John Schneider and Pete Carroll, they're not going to leave a stone unturned, and if both these players truly are available, guarantee that John Schneider has already made a call to both the Jaguars and the Dolphins about their availability to see if something can be worked out. Who knows if that leads to an actual deal or not? We'll just have to wait and see. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact me LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Visiting us online at LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up tomorrow, Rob and I will be taking a closer look at Seattle's win in Pittsburgh on both sides of the football. Plus, it's officially Throwback Tuesday. Hope you'll tune in. Thanks for listening in. Go Hawks!